Hello there. You're listening to Audacity, the Authentic Entrepreneur podcast. I'm your host, Claire Ackers. In this space, you will hear me talk about anything and everything you need to be an authentic entrepreneur so that you can not only grow a wildly successful business that gives you the wealth and freedom you dream of, but so that you can also stay true to yourself and your values, and also have massive impact with your work. I'm a mum of three, serial entrepreneur, business coach, and cheerleader for those of you who have been brave and audacious enough to set up in business. So, welcome to the Audacity Podcast. I am so glad you're here, and let's dive in to the episode. So today I am talking to Kay Crudson, who is a mum, who is a freelance reporter, who is a weather presenter on the BBC. You might have seen her on your screens there, and has got all sorts of exciting charity passions and all that kind of thing. We're going to get into her story. But first of all, I need to have a little chat about how we met Kay, because, well, as we remember it, we first met on stage at an Unspoken conference that I was organising for Lean in Leeds. But actually, it turns out we went through high school together, didn't we? But we don't remember each other.
No, I still find that the weirdest thing.
It's really weird, isn't it?
How did we not? We must have just been on the opposite sides of the year.
Must have been. But it's just one of those lovely little life synchronicity things.
Yeah. Didn't we actually meet, secondly, at the Lean in Leeds event? Didn't I borrow your pump?
You did borrow my breast pump. There, yes, that is how we bonded. I mean, once you've shared a breast pump, you're mates for life, really, aren't you?
I think I thought, because Ava at the time was about 15 months or something like that, and I just assumed by that point your boobs would be fine. But no, thank God you were there. I was looking around like, anybody, can anybody hand pump? I don't care, do anything. Yeah.
Yeah, and my youngest, Bobby, she was only about 5 weeks then. She was absolutely tiny. So I have no recollection of what I said on stage. I was doing the keynote speech. And
you did a great speech, mate. It was brilliant.
Could have said
how
anything.
You did that is beyond me. I just don't get it. At the time, I thought, oh, yeah, nice one. And then having gone on and had another child, and I think at 5 weeks, I was not in a place to get up on stage and do a keynote speech then. So kudos.
Well, you know what? Let's dive straight into that topic. So I was going to get you to tell your story, but let's absolutely come back to that because it's fascinating. But the point of this podcast is it is all about authenticity and doing things differently and having it all. Yes, absolutely. But in a way that is true to you. You know, you can't have everything, but you can kind of have your everything as long as you put the time into work, then what that is. But for us, we both had quite stark realities of that, notably me going back to work after 4 weeks of having my youngest and being on the phone to a client with one hand and breastfeeding with the other, and the whole kind of car crash of hormones that involves. And you had something similar, didn't you?
Not quite as epic as you, but yeah, at 9 weeks, work rang. So last year, I freelanced mainly in radio, so I was hosting the breakfast show for Radio Manchester. And then I thought in my head, you know, by springtime, maybe that's a good time to get back into radio, and I've engaged brain. And then after 9 weeks, TV rang me and said, oh, can you come back? Now, I'd not done TV weather for 2 years because of COVID. So, and I just had a baby, and I had a C-section with Nell, much like I did with Ava. And unfortunately, this time around, I got back-to-back infections. So for the first 8 weeks, Ava came home on Nell's second week with a sickness bug. Spent 4 days trying not to do too much, but having to clean sheets 3,000 times. And I thought I got away with it, but by the fifth day, I started. And projectile vomiting whilst holding your C-section.
I mean, you don't want to do that with stitches.
No, not with stitches and whilst breastfeeding. So at one point, I narrowly missed puking on Nell's head in the middle of the night by half a centimetre. And then I got an infection. And then I got another infection. So the first 8 weeks were just minging. I had this grand idea of like, I'll do a podcast, Planet Mum. And I was like, I'm going to do every week, you know, a reality of how it is and like help other mums, support the mums. And I physically, I couldn't see for most of the first 8 weeks. Like I just I've barely turned my laptop on. And then at 9 weeks, I got the phone call. Will you come back in the new year to TV? And I was like, oh.
So what was going through your mind then? Why did you think, that's a great idea, I'll do that?
Because a couple of things. We moved at the end of 2020, we moved back up north. So we were living in London. And I had some opportunities with BBC London weather, but it's very difficult because in weather it's shift work, and down there I didn't have any family and they really had one mate, so it was very hard to do shift work and have someone look after Ava. So I used to do most of my freelancing up here. My mum would then have Ava. But then of course COVID hit, so all freelancing certainly within Northwest Tonight, the freelancing budget was cut, and most presenters during the time worked from the garden. So when I moved up back here, part of the reason was it would be easier for me to work for BBC at Salford, but it was all still not going back to normal. And even when life started to get a little bit back to normal, they still restricted freelancing, didn't want any others in the building. So I was like, oh my God, I'll speak to ITV. And really, half of me is a radio presenter, half of me is a weather presenter. In weather, they're really only two jobs in the Northwest, so it's ITV or BBC, and those jobs are taken. So it's like, oh no, what am I gonna do? Like, and Jim's like, brilliant, so we moved up north so you could work and now you can't work. All right, nice one. So that was put on hold, and then when the call came, I thought, well, I have to say yes no matter what, because I'm a freelancer, and if I don't say yeah, they'll find someone else, and once they find someone else, then when do I get the call again? So I was like, right, yeah, sure, when? And it was to go back in the middle of January. So that apart from everything else, my thoughts were, holy God, I have eaten and drunk. Well, I hadn't drunk, had I was pregnant and then on leave. Breastfeeding. I've eaten and I'm coming up to Christmas. Like, how am I supposed to lose all this weight? Because, again, a freelancer, you know, you provide your own outfit. So I've got a whole TV wardrobe, none of which fitted because I've just had a baby. So that was my most like worrying concern.
But I love that's where your mind went to immediately. What am I going to wear?
How many pairs of Spanx can I actually fit on? Then I thought, shit, I've not been on telly for 2 years. I can't actually remember. Like, how do I even log onto a computer right now? So logistics, it was a bit of a nightmare. But I went in, took 5 hours. Painful. But I did it. And do you know what? Part of me wanted to do it to just say, ha, I can do it, and you can do it, and if you really want to do something, you can. And by that point, Nell was 12 weeks old, my first shift on TV. I was 5 pounds heavier than the last fattest time I'd been on TV, but I managed to squeeze into my dress. I did wear two pairs of Spanx. And I just thought, do you know what? I've not slept now for 12 weeks, and I'm breastfeeding. And just in order to get my foot through the door here to do a shift has been a ridiculous schedule of who's picking who up, how can I get someone to get Ava when I've got the car, we've only got one car, where's Nell going, who do I trust enough to have Nell so that I can come to work and actually enjoy it, and still get back in time to feed her and not miss too much, and you know, everything that, with the greatest respect, my partner Jim has a lot to think about and he does an awful lot, but the little things that would just go over his head, like, oh, I've actually got to pick Ava up. So the logistics work and they continue to be a nightmare. It just means I've got to be like militant on the plan and who's where, when, and the reality really, because I've been asked to do pretty much the month of half of Jan, half of Feb, and it's just not realistic. I can't commit to doing 5 days a week at the point, and it's not that much improved, but I was maybe getting about 3 hours sleep a night broken, and leaving Nell that young with my mum, who I trust unbelievably, like I've got no issue with that, but it's not really fair on my mum either. It's a brand new baby who is upset because she's not got boob near her 5 days a week, and Ava, and having the only car, and then not seeing Jim because the hours are, you know, that they're not really that sociable. I just thought, you know what, at least I'm in a position where I can say no. And for me, mentally and physically, at the minute, two shifts a week is pretty much all I can commit to, in order to keep me and everyone else happy. So that's what I did. And to be fair, the first week I actually did 1 week, 3 days, and then the following Monday, Tuesday. So I kind of did a full week just with a weekend in between, and it was too much, but it meant that I was back and I felt confident enough to carry on. I have done it. I'm pleased I've done it. I continue, like, I'm in work tomorrow, a couple of shifts next week. But at the minute, he's in America for 2 weeks. So I'm single parenting, and figuring out how to get that sorted out is, honestly, it's easy to say no. But for the woman inside me who's not just a mum, and that's absolutely fine to those who are, I've always wanted to be stay-at-home mums. My best mate has only ever wanted to be a stay-at-home mum. That's not me. I've always been a Cree girl. The thought of not being on air in some capacity, like, scares me. So, you know, in order to have my all, I have to kind of put myself first, even if it's just only 1 4-hour shift a week.
Yeah. And you tell that story in a very light, humorous way. And of course, it is very glam, you know, getting the call from telly to come and be on telly, and it is exciting. But the grit you must have had to screw from somewhere in order to be able to work through all those logistics, all the guilt at best, that all those feelings that comes coming up in order to put yourself first and keep your career front and center, you know. It's a reality for a lot of women out there, isn't it? Is that they feel pulled to make that choice, to go through all the emotions. I've certainly been through it with, I've got three kids, and the guilt I feel on a daily basis. And then for you to have to do all that and then be on telly with lights and cameras in your faces and show up as a bright, happy weather girl. So I don't mean that in a derivative way.
There's four of us in a mum group. We all met when we were just about to have the babies, and we've quite quickly become friends by talking every hour of every night for the past 4 months. And then every time I'm on air, the girls text me, I just don't know how you're doing it. How are you talking? How are you doing stringing a sentence? And I think because I've done it for so many years, it's almost like driving a car for me, as long as it's not a horrific forecast. The actual being on TV bit is the easy part, because I'm blowing my own trumpet, but I know what I'm talking about. And it's just getting to be on that spot, ready for them to say, count me down to be on air. That's the hard part. A couple of weeks ago, I was there, and I was about to go on air, and I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna blow up. And I don't know why. My mum had sent me a video of Nell, and I'd stupidly watched it. And as soon as I watched it, my boobs just went, oh,
I was gonna say, did you get the electric zing?
And I thought, I can't be on, I'm going to leak on TV. They might get a few more ratings. They probably won't be the ones they want. I can't do it. So I just said, how long have I got? And they were like, 6 minutes. So I went, it's enough time. I just ran and just took out a little bit. You know, that, and then coming home, and it's like, oh, look at you. Like, you've got, what a great life. And I came home, and it was a screaming colic nightmare for the next 3 hours. So I'm stood there in my Spanx, full face of TV makeup and hair. And you know, I can't see Jim. Ava's asleep. I've got him stood in the dark with a screaming baby. And then, you know, a couple of hours of sleep that night before Ava's up at 6 to come and start the day again. So it is...
living the dream, Kay. Living the dream.
Do you know what? Someone, and I don't name names, but you may well guess... a lady in my life who's very close to me, not my mother, said to me, aren't you lucky? And I said, all right, yeah, oh God, I am, to be fair. Like, to be able to carry on and do something that I've trained my entire career. I do, but it doesn't go without doing everything else. And I never, ever there's not a position where he's having to do anything else other than at one point walk and get Ava from a cousin's house, and that's it. You know, everything's sorted. Whoever's here looking after it, I've made tea for everyone before I've left. I come home, I sort everything out with Nell. So I do feel lucky that I can do it, but it is, you know, a logistical nightmare, and it's testing at times. And she said, no, aren't you lucky that he has allowed you to go back to work?
Whoa.
And I said, whoa, right, where do I go with that? I said, I'll be honest, there'd be no instance where that would be a scenario, because I wouldn't be with him. So what century are we in? And if I wanted to go back to work at week four, like you, I'd have gone back to work. And by the way, yes, I have gone back to work, but it's bloody hard going to work for just one shift a week in order to do all that. So, you know, when you think, oh, I am going to lose it on this one, not a bit of my tongue. No, he is lucky. In fact, we're both lucky for different things, but certainly I'm not waiting to be given the good grace to say, yes, you can go back to work. Do me a favour. Well, that's made me want to go back full time. Do you know what I mean? Anyway.
Well, this is kind of a common theme. When we had a little chat before we started recording, there's definitely a common theme emerging in our little chats about resilience. I would love you to tell the story of how you got to be in where you are in your career today, because there was a bit of grit and resilience in that tale, wasn't there? Remember you telling me the last time we spoke.
So, well, I'll speed version. I'd always been in TV and radio, and I did everything. Hospital radio, local radio. At one point I was doing three jobs back to back, two of which I wasn't getting paid for, just so I could be on radio. I ran a TV studio, and then I eventually got on to the BBC training, journalism trainee scheme, which at the time was really hard to get onto. It's about, they took on 15 people, they had 5,000 applicants, and I made it down to the last 100. And in the interview, God, I got really drunk the night before with my mum to try and calm my nerves. I had really bad IBS. The train journey was interesting. And I sat down next to this lady, and she said, oh, how you doing? Of course, me being me. Well, I've, you know, shit myself on the way in. I'm a really late night. I'm sweating. Blah, 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 blah. And I said, all right, we better get going. And then she stood up and was the course director of the entire training academy. And I was like, okay.
A definite first impression.
Anyway, she rang. I got offered a place to go and be a trainee reporter in Northern Ireland. And she said, I'll be honest with you, you didn't get the best news. It was a 5-hour interview. One part was a test on your news knowledge. She went, you got all your entertainment knowledge, but, you know, general news was probably the lowest we've ever had. I was like, oh, that's... it's not good, is it? And she said, well, the reason you've got a place is because out of 15, we need one who is the talker, and it's more personality led than what they know about the breaking news. And I was like, okay, thank God I told you the story of me shitting myself on the tram then. So I got on the BBC that way, and I stayed in Northern Ireland for a couple of years, and I worked in TV and radio, and I came back producing News Round. One of the hardest jobs I've ever done, trying to write news for kids. You need to know everything about it, but then break it down into the easiest way possible.
Yeah, absolutely.
And be factually correct and unbiased. And so that was an interesting job before my boss at the time said, God, you like the weather, don't you? I mean, who says that? When it's sunny. And she was heading up a scheme to give someone from nations and regions a chance to work at Salford. We'd just opened there, and for someone at Salford to go and swap. So I became that person. Did not, or rather was not told that my wake-up call would be 3 a.m. And I'd have to know what I was talking about. So that quickly led to an open university, part of a degree on being a broadcast journalist. Not a broadcast journalist, a broadcast meteorologist. So difference between me and, let's say, a Met head is they are intensely, acutely aware of the understanding and knowledge of weather systems and can forecast from supercomputers, we can forecast from the information they give. So a meteorologist to a broadcast standard. So retrained and was in Leeds, and I covered the north of England from Leeds, but always on early shifts. I used to do the most unsociable time in my 20s. I'd work Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And so that meant going to bed basically at 8.
I kept you out of trouble.
I know. Like, woo-hoo! Student nights on a Tuesday night in Leeds. That's where I was, but I managed to last for about an hour because I was so knackered. And that was me until I moved down to Nottingham and did TV there. And eventually ended up hosting the breakfast show in York. I'd always done radio. And it was my dream job to have a breakfast show. But I really didn't want to leave weather. But conveniently, at the same time, like 2 weeks before I was starting the job, I met the one, Jim, who happened to live in New York as I was moving to York, my boss at the time.
Oh, the irony.
I know, my boss said, sorry, what part of York is that? And I was like, it's the part that's 3,000 miles away.
Oh, no. So
within the year of meeting him, we spent, and we only know this because we had to, for my visas, I emigrated to America, and for my visas, they needed to know everything about when we'd met, and it wasn't just some sort of sham, like, relationship. We spent, in total, 30 days together. And in those 30 days, we managed to get accidentally pregnant, lose that baby, decide we want a baby, get re-pregnant, me do a full new job, not have a holiday for 3 months, so I couldn't see him, take a couple of holidays with him, and then emigrate to America. So, wow. And leave my career, which is, you know, my friends were like, what? All you've ever done? Like, I gave my life and soul, especially to the BBC. I was always the one that, call on Kay, she's got no commitments, she'll do it. And I always said, yeah, because I always wanted to do it. Mm. And when I left, granted, I then had Ava, so life was completely different, but I mourned the loss of me and where I'd gone. And I was in America, and I couldn't work. Because I didn't have my green card, I didn't have family there, and I just had this new baby, and I was like, "Oh, is this who am I?" And like, you know, I do firmly believe in put out what you want to receive, and I did. I had a good word with the universe, and Jim, for the first time in his complete career, had been offered. He's from Manchester as well. He'd been offered a job to transfer back to London, and this was when Ava was one, and coincidentally something happened sadly with the main presenter at Northwestern Eye at the time, and they actually got in touch with me, and serendipitously we moved back to England just as it was possible for me to go back on telly, and so I carried on. I just basically had like a year off, and but in that year, you know, it was a lot of change. I thought I'd said goodbye to family. I wasn't allowed to leave the country for 18 months because of visas, and you know, within about 6 weeks later, we were like, oh, by the way, we're back again. Wow. So came back, moved to London, and then it was COVID. So it was all change again. And then, yeah, here I am. Well, I've not lived back in properly in Manchester since I was 18. So I'm 4 miles down the road from my mum, and back doing what I love doing, albeit with another baby in tow. So busy. Wowzers.
Yeah, just a bit phenomenal. Okay, here's a question. Yeah. So imagine there is someone listening to this who is sitting at home or on their commute or bored in the office and is thinking, jeepers creepers, for want of a better term. She sounds amazing. I'm sick of settling. I need to shake up my life a bit. You know, I suspect there is something out there more for me. What would your advice to that person be?
Do it. Because life is just too short. And you know, there are a few reasons why that's, I know, is fact. I lost one of my best mates a couple of years ago. And when we lost her, I thought, you know, this could happen to anyone at any given point. Life is short. And if you're not happy, change it. And that is a very easy thing to say. Not quite as easy to do practically. But there are definitely things that you can be doing in order to reach your end goal of ultimately changing what you're doing. So maybe it's maybe you want a complete job change. Well, fine, stay with the job you've got, but on the sideline, either start taking that hobby and turning it into more of a course, a part-time course. I did my I'd done my degree. The degree I did, or well, part of the degree I did for weather, I could be asked doing. But if I hadn't have done it, I wouldn't have been able to do the job. So I'd work from, I'd be up at 3 a.m, I'd finish at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and then I'd have to spend the afternoon studying an open university course, which with my eyes, like, oh my God. And teaching, you know, essentially you're on your own, aren't you? It was hard, but it paid off. So you have to put in the hard work. It's not, and you know, I do think there are the right places at the right time. People, you meet people, certainly, when you're meant to meet them, I think. But it's not, a lot of people are like, oh, aren't you lucky? Well, no, I bloody well worked damn hard, and I wouldn't have got onto the BBC had I not spent 3 years working half for free, 20-hour days. Mm. So nothing is given to you on a plate, but the more effort you put in, I do think it will pay off if yeah. that's what you're meant to be doing.
Yeah, create your own luck.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, inspiring stuff. And I want to make sure that we touch upon your charity work, because, you know, let's Cradle is an amazing charity, so let's spread some awareness yeah. about it. Tell me about Cradle.
Well, I met Cradle. I met the founder of Cradle, Louise, online actually. So we lost our first baby, Reg, who was, you know, a beautiful mistake. It was he was never planned. And I say he, we don't know. It just we named him Reg and he became he. We lost him at 11 weeks. And I was so taken aback by people's reaction in a negative way. And the reaction I got in the hospital, I remember the lady, a sonographer, just said, "We'll turn the light on." And she's like, "Oh yeah, there's no heartbeat, so you're going to have to go upstairs and figure out what to do next." I went, wow, hang on a minute there. I might be the 19th person you've seen today, but this is my first baby and my first loss, and I need more than go upstairs, there's no heartbeat. And then when I started to tell people, everyone was like, pull me into a side room. I remember one lady who's a good friend of mine pulled me into a studio at work and sort of whispered that she'd had 5 miscarriages and she'd never spoken about it. Well, this is ridiculous. I mean, I speak openly and honestly about anything and everything. Jim will quite probably say I tell too much. Can't help it. Like, it just comes out. But if I want to talk about my baby that died in an open place and that makes you feel uncomfortable, that's on you, not me. I'm fine with it. So why on earth should I have to be dragged into a small room and whispered, am I okay? No, I'm not all right. I'm really bloody sad, actually. And I took 2 weeks off work and we both were heartbroken. And my boss said, what are you going to tell your listeners? I was the breakfast show host at the time. What are you going to tell the listeners when you come back? And I was like, that I've had a miscarriage. I'm really sad and could do with your help. And he was like, oh, right. Or you could tell them that you've been on holiday. And I was like, oh, you can fuck off. Like, are you kidding me? It's the worst holiday I've ever been on. And, you know, from his point of view, I get it. He's thinking about his business and the reaction of others. And I thought, I don't care. Like, I'm not going to lie about it. Like, it's completely goes against everything I am. So I did. Turns out they had the best breakfast show pretty much that ever had. People ringing in. I'd had a miscarriage 40, 50 years ago. I've never been able to speak about it. I thought, this is the whole point, isn't it? Like, we should be able to talk about it openly and honestly. It's not a negative. Stop making me feel like I've done something wrong. I hate the fact that it's called a miscarriage. Like, you've carried it off and you've gotten rid of it. It's like, bloody hell, it's out of my control and I'm devastated and my baby's died. So I need people to actually know about it and talk about it so I can remember. Because once you're pregnant, I don't care if you're a day pregnant or 10 weeks pregnant or 4 months pregnant, that you are pregnant from the minute you find out, you find that line and automatically you create a life. And certainly I did. You run through the first year. I mean, you can see pictures in your head up to it for the rest of the life. Like,
you've got it planned out.
Yeah. So when that's taken away from you, right, fair enough. You might be able to have an operation and remove, what do they call it? Products of conception. Sorry, that's my baby. You can remove my baby, but you can't remove my my thoughts and my emotions and everything that I've pictured, that stays with me, and I want to be able to talk about that. So I made, with a very good friend of mine, Steve Bailey, we created, produced, presented a documentary called The Emptiness Within. And I just went around the country and spoke to different women about their losses and, you know, the taboo subject of a miscarriage and why on earth in, what was it then, 2018, is it a taboo? And I brought that out 5 days after I had Ava. So again, back to working, being an emotional wreck, being on every radio station, talking about Reg while trying to feed a screaming 5 week old, 5 day old baby. And it, you know, the plan was never to, it was just about keeping the subject going, keeping the conversation alive. It went on to win loads of awards. It was not in, I didn't do it to be an award winner. I just wanted people to talk about it and know that they had something that they could listen to if they needed it. And it introduced me to Louise at Cradle. And so through Cradle, I've become a trustee of the charity. We support women from that hospital bed, from the minute you find out, from that minute the sonographer turns light on. They don't need to speak if that, if they're going to say something that doesn't help, they can just give one of our tissue packs and our cards, and you know that someone is there for you to talk to. So we're always at the end of the phone. And in hospital, if someone is rushed in or you are, you know, going in for a planned operation, you'll receive one of our care packs, which has everything you need to make yourself feel a little bit more comfortable. And more importantly, our dear friend letter, which is the letter that Louise wished someone had written to her when she was in hospital. And we also offer 6 sessions of counselling, funded counselling for women, because the weight on the NHS is just insane. And a weekly support group for women to just log on and talk to other people who've been there and get it and know it's shit and, you know, cry and laugh if you want to cry and laugh. So I thankfully found Cradle before we decided to have another baby after Ava, which we did, and we sadly lost. And that was when we were living down in London during lockdown. So I went through the whole horrible thing again with no one. Jim couldn't come in the hospital, couldn't even come in the car park.
Horrific.
And that hospital that was in didn't have Cradle, thankfully do now. And thankfully I already had tools in my box to know how to cope, but a lot of people don't. And at that point, I decided then, enough now, I can't carry on like this cycle of losing babies, and my heart was broken and I'm done. And then we decided, and that was it. And then the next day I woke up and I was like, the problem is I'm not actually done. And he was done, but I'm not done. And I was like, I can't. Where there's hope, I will carry. So we just basically decided between us that we would let nature take its course and move up north. And I said, before, you know, I'm going to give myself up till I'm 40, which is in 2 weeks' time, 3 weeks' time. And then if that's that, then that's that. I'll have to move on. And do you know what? I moved up north. It didn't happen. And we've always been pregnant within about 10 minutes. So it got to the December and I was just devastated. And I thought, I can't actually see this out another year. It's awful. Like every month, like the desperation and the hope and the mourning the babies. And then I went and bloody got COVID, didn't I? And it knocked me upside down and inside out. I was in bed for 3 weeks with it and stayed quite ill with it for another 3 weeks after, which I thought was long COVID. And it turns out it was now. So I don't know when that happened during being pretty ill, but
I was going to say that is some fortitude.
yet again, I had another pregnancy, which I pretty much hated, because every minute of every day you think it's gone, it's not going to last. I bled at 15 weeks, that's it, she's gone. And somehow she stayed on, and she's totally like, she's so cute. Nell,
she's beautiful.
Like, she's a right, I said from day one, I really wanted like chunky baby, like, because Ava was dead skinny, and out popped Nell. She's ginormous, like she's in age worn clothes, and she's not even 5 months yet. She's so cute. She just laughs. She's dead happy. She doesn't like sleeping, but do you know what? Neither do I, so whatever. And she's amazing. So thankfully, I had cradles during that time, and I continued to help women. But I did, to be fair, carry on. I do one-to-one calls with women, and I had a call 2 days after I had her, and I was like, no, I'm doing it. I'm absolutely doing it. And after I got the phone, I was like, that wasn't fair on anyone. Like, the lady who could hear Nell, me, Nell. So I've taken a few months to focus on Nell.
Yeah.
And April, I'm back with a vengeance. I'm still making all the packs, and I meet up with the nurses in Manchester to make sure that we've got enough supplies in hospitals and fundraising and stuff. But actual one-to-one support, yeah, I'll be back in April. But they are incredible. And if you ever need to talk to anyone, whether it's friends or that's going through it or yourself, then cradle.org.uk, you can contact us through there, and there's always someone for you to talk to. So
wonderful.
You're never alone.
What an absolutely beautiful story of hope. And we'll put a link in the show notes as well. So if anyone wants to come and find you or want some support or to give you a load of cash, then they can do that as well.
Cash. And the link to the documentary, the radio documentary we did, The Emptiness Within, I'll give you that as well. It will be forever on BBC Sounds, so it's always there to listen to. And it's just nice to know that there's other people going through it when you think you're alone.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, Kay, you have got to go and get your lovely daughter, who's being looked after by your lovely mum. But thank you so much for joining me today. What an absolutely just bloody inspiring tale. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh,
thanks for having me. Cheers,
Jill. Thank you so much for listening. It's been great to have you here, and I hope you've enjoyed the episode. If you like what you hear and you'd like to connect, head on over to claireackers.com. And I'm most active on LinkedIn. Just search for Claire Ackers. That's Claire with an I and an E. See you next time.